preconceived notion about YouTube is you make YouTube videos, okay, you're a crazy guy that runs around with a camera. But there are like hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of YouTube channels that are making six, seven, eight figures without even appearing on camera.
Hey, everybody. This is The Entrepreneur Experiment, and I'm Gary Fox. I'm going to get straight into today's episode because that's what today's guest advised me. Mr. Paddy Galloway is a YouTube consultant to the biggest YouTubers in the world, and he's also an extremely successful YouTuber himself with his own channel. We break down what is YouTube, how do you make money from it, and how he's built a consulting business from right here in Ireland that now generates over 1 billion views for his clients per year. Here is my chat with Paddy Galloway. Before we kick into that, let me just thank my three partners for season 7. First up, we have Bay Street Innovation. That's baystreet.io. Think of them simply as your technical partner. If you've got a business already and you're looking for automation or you're looking to bring some more technology into it, chat to Gareth and his team. Or if you've got an idea you want to bring to reality, Gareth and his team can bring a concept to life. Next up, we have chapter.ie. Deirdre and her team are a brand studio unlike any other. If you have a brand that you're looking to reinvigorate or you have an idea for a brand, just simply call them. There's no other choice. Just call them. You're in the best hands in Ireland. And finally, findavenue.ie does exactly what it says in the tin. Sean and his team, if you're a corporate event organizer, they're the people to talk to. If you're looking to organize anything to do with your company, whether it's a party, a conference, a meeting, they'll organize everything from the venue, the entertainment, top to toe, and it doesn't even cost anything. That's findavenue.ie. Now, straight into my chat, Paddy Galloway. Paddy, welcome to the pod.
It's great to be here.
We're just laughing about my professional countdown. Very, very slick setup we have.
Yeah, definitely. It gave me a real butterfly, so it did. I feel like the time is now.
Okay, we're live. Is that better?
Yeah.
Welcome to the pod, man. It's great to chat to you. You're someone I followed for a long, long time. You put out absolute gold on Instagram and YouTube. What do you do?
What do I do? That's a question that I always struggle with. It's a hard one because, I mean, technically, I'm a YouTuber who teaches other YouTubers how to do YouTube. So I'm a YouTuber plus YouTube consultant. Essentially, I guess, in like a really short way, I'm like Mr. YouTube. I just love YouTube. I study the platform every day. I've been doing it for well over a decade since I was a young fella. And I'm lucky enough today to work with some really big creators, helping them with their strategy. And I also have my own channel too, which I'm glad to hear you're a fan of, where I break down how YouTubers have grown and try to provide some really good advice for creators of any size, 100 subs or 100 million. I try to make videos that can help them out.
You've worked with a lot of big names. We'll get to them in a while. So basically, essentially, you have two parts to your business. You have your YouTube channel, and then you teach other YouTubers how to be better YouTubers.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, yeah, the YouTube side is like a content business. Essentially, I monetize through AdSense, which is just like marketing, people paying for ads on my videos. And that content as it's in itself almost operates as inbound marketing for my consulting business, because people watch the videos, they understand I have a good understanding of YouTube and the algorithm and different things. And then a lot of big creators will come to me and say, hey, I'd love for you to apply some of the stuff you know to our content. And yeah, it's less of teaching and more of actually working with people to, you know, deliver results. So I go into a channel that maybe is getting 20 million views a month, and my goal for them is to get them up to 40 million views a month. Very specific, you know, and I do like a mix. So like some things will be like a retainer basis, just like a typical sort of agency would do. So I'd work with someone over a long period of time. But I also do some public stuff with people of any size. So any person on the street can just book in for like a 1 hour call with me, and they're fun as well. But I guess that 1 hour stuff is more of the teaching side, whereas the bigger business is in a long-term partnership and consulting work with people.
I gotcha. YouTube is just a beast. I'm addicted. That's mainly what goes on my TV. We have a TV. It's mainly just to watch sports at the weekend, but generally it's either Netflix, Amazon Prime, or YouTube, probably in the reverse order, YouTube starting first. How did you get into this, I guess? Because I think most younger listeners listening will go, yeah, that's the dream career. Like that YouTuber is now like the career for so many young creators and young people in school. But how did you get into it? Because I mean, 10 years ago, in YouTube terms, is a long time.
Yeah. And really, I think when I think about it, it was actually 2007. So that's longer than 10 years.
Yeah.
It's like 14 years. So yeah, it was a very long time ago. And I guess I was kind of lucky. Like I was, you know, I'm 25 now. I was born in 1996. So in 2007, I was 11. And I was always just really interested in technology and the internet. I remember, like, even at the age of like, probably like 7 or 8, I think I got my first camera, and I was just really into shooting videos with me and my brother and just putting them on a computer and like making these like crazy montages of us, like, you know, sparring or wrestling or playing football. And we never uploaded them anywhere. We just like used to just have them on the computer and just watch with friends or whatever. And it's just a great little thing we used to do. And then I just discovered YouTube, because YouTube was founded in 2005. It started to become like kind of a thing in like 2006. I just loved how homemade everything felt, the DIY nature of it. Because, you know, you watch TV and you might love TV, but then you're like, I want to make TV. And then you realize you have to go to school to do it. You have to have all this expensive equipment. You need to have like actors and all this sort of stuff. You look at YouTube and you're like, wow, I could do this right now if I've got a camera. So I saw YouTube and I was like, wow, there's something I can do here. So I started uploading those videos I was making and to a channel. And I quickly kind of realized it wasn't actually the filming I was really interested in. It was the growing. It was building an audience. It was cultivating an audience. So even back then, I was 11 or 12. I might be getting some of the ages mixed up, but it's roughly around 11 or 12. Mm. And I was looking at, okay, how are these channels growing? How can I apply that to me? I was thinking of every growth hack in the book. Back then, like, things like sub for sub were like a big thing. So I figured out a strategy to like rank first on channel comments, which are an old feature where you used to be able to go into like a channel like Smosh and you could leave a comment, and if you got enough upvotes, it would be like at the top. And like I would like kind of construct this comment that would get upvotes but also would have like a subscriber sub to sub thing at the end, and I get loads of sub to subs from that. Terrible strategy now. I mean, it was a terrible strategy back then too, but it kind of was this idea of like, wow, I can actually get just random people in the world to see a comment and then go and watch my content. And the funny thing now is like doing that would be the worst thing possible, because you're going to be bringing in people who probably don't have any interest in your videos, which actually might hurt your channel. But back then, YouTube's algorithm was much more simplistic. It was just like, people are watching, let's show it to more people. You know, it was the simplest form of the algorithm. And from there, I just kept making channels. Like between my teenage years, I kept it all quite private as well. I wasn't like, you know, I had lots of friends in school, but I wouldn't really mention it. I don't think any of my friends really knew about any of the channels.
What kind of stuff were you making?
So like my first channel was just like a personal sort of skit channel where me and my brother used to just post like random skits. And it was mainly me and my brother was just, you know, an actor in the videos. Like I remember I put up a video where it was like a combination of throwing snowballs at my brother's face and putting them in slow-mo and like putting like dramatic music over them. I remember that video got like 10 views and 2 dislikes. one like, 2 dislikes and 10 views. And that's kind of where it started. And then over time, like whatever interest I had, whatever passion I have, and, you know, we've all been a, you know, 12, 13, 14 year old kid. You just go through so many fads and phases. That's the time in your life. You just get into so much stuff. So like I had a channel where I talked about football. I think it was called Paddy G Talks Football. They're all, like, I think it's private now. I don't think it's available. If anyone's going to try and look it up.
Everyone's Googling it right now.
Yeah. I was really into music and EDM and electronic music. So I had these channels where I used to essentially like have lots of artists that I knew that were making electronic music. And I built like a no copyright music channel. And I grew that to like a few thousand subscribers. And, you know, I think I got like, you know, maybe a few hundred thousand views. And I started to like, oh, this is actually something, you know, I could do. It's interesting. Hmm. Funny thing is, back then, only the real top creators were monetizing. I wasn't monetizing. But then over time, I started more channels. I had some success. I actually started a channel in 2014 where I posted Irish hip hop because I saw like there was lots of Irish hip hop artists, and some of them were pretty good, but they were all just uploading like terrible videos with like no thumbnail and like a, you know, a misspelled title or something. Mm. And I was looking at that, I was like, wow, imagine there was like a hub where we could just post Irish hip hop. And I started that channel. And that was probably the first successful channel I had to any scale anyway. It was the first channel I had that really took off. And like within a few years, I grew that to 100K subs,
wow,
50 million views or something. at the start, I didn't really make much money from it because I was just posting videos essentially. But after a while, I built a kind of business model around it when I was in my late teens, where I'd like, you know, do promotion for artists. And like when they had a single launch, we'd do a whole campaign together with their YouTube channel. And you know, through that money, like that's how I lived. I didn't need a part-time job. Wow. I never had a part-time job. I just worked on YouTube and used that to help pay for college and everything else.
Was that the first time you thought, might be a business here?
Yeah, that was it. Like I was always really interested to see how these YouTubers were monetizing. But even in 2013, 2014, when I first started being able to do that myself, there wasn't much information about it. It was just like, oh, they get to turn ads on their channel and they get money. But like no one knew how much it was. And
okay.
Like long story short, it wasn't very much back then, like compared to what it is now. It was just minuscule. But yeah, I was like, there could be like an interesting business to build here. And the older I got, I just realized this is a skill. Like being able to build and monetize an audience is a skill. And now, you know, long story short, I had lots of other channels between the ages of 17 and 25 that we won't even go over. There's so many. But like my current channel now is almost like an accumulation of everything I've learned. I'm just trying to apply it through the videos.
That's exactly like every entrepreneur. I think nearly everyone we've had on the pod so far, it's never the first one, right? It's like you keep trying and trying and trying, failing, learning, iterating. And a YouTube channel is exactly that, isn't it? It's the all these experiments where you kind of keep tweaking. You're the perfect example of that, of someone who just started through passion but then slowly started to tweak and find his formula. What you said there, being able to build and monetize an audience being a skill, arguably I think in 2021 that's probably one of the best skills in marketing and the most in demand.
Yeah, it's huge. I think the pandemic accelerated things as well. I noticed that, like, even in, like, I follow lots of trends and data and like seeing, like, you know, Google Trends for like how to start a YouTube channel, stuff like that, how to grow an audience, how to grow an Instagram, all these different things just, you know, skyrocketed during the first lockdown. But it was cultivating for years before that. I'd say since about 2015 and 2016, like the whole online space, YouTube platforms, they've just been in this huge trajectory where every year more and more budget is taken away from your BBCs, your Foxes, your CNNs, your RTEs, and is allocated towards digital marketing. And even in digital marketing, I think the trends I'm seeing is even more on YouTube than other platforms because of how engaged the audience is. So yeah, like I'm very lucky to, in some ways, have stumbled across it. It's not too dissimilar. Like I'm not as rich as if I'd done this, but it's not too dissimilar to someone like stumbling across cryptocurrency in like 2011. Like, I mean, I wish that was me in some ways, but it's kind of a similar thing where like at the time it just feels like kind of indie and like almost a bit almost like anarchist. It's like, this is like against everything else. Like, it's like, I'm going to do this myself. It's like a new financial currency. And like YouTube is like a new, you know, platform for video. It's like the new TV. And now we've got to a point where, you know, cryptocurrency is almost mainstream now, and YouTube is mainstream. Like, like the kids are not watching TV, as I'm sure you're aware. Like, and people my age and you yourself, like I watch about, the only TV I watch is sport. Like, I only watch like the boxing or the football.
Yeah.
I watch a bit of Netflix, but even Netflix in itself, Netflix is more like YouTube than it is traditional media in some ways. Like, it's a platform. You know, they've got algorithms. They have like a thumbnail algorithm that switches thumbnails based on what thumbnails you clicked in the past. So if you prove to Netflix that you're interested in like relationships and couples, there might be a movie where even the relationship and couple isn't a big theme. They'll show you a picture with a relationship, like two people kissing in the thumbnail.
Oh, wow. So like, is that that's dynamic, is it?
Yeah, that's dynamic. It changes based on your behavior. And there's actually a really good thread on Twitter. I was reading about it recently. And I think that lends itself more to YouTube and the way YouTube creators think about content than it does traditional media.
But the rise of, I won't call them celebrity YouTubers, but people who have built massive followings in an immensely short space of time, relatively speaking, you know, a couple of years, it's phenomenal. People 1, 2, 3 million subs who've only maybe started in the last 3, 4 years. It's phenomenal. Do you put that down to kind of the growth in YouTube over the last kind of couple of years?
Yeah, it's down to a number of things. Like, it is like, yes, the popularity is the new users coming to YouTube, but a lot of it is cultivated by YouTube's algorithm and the way they view content distribution. So like, you know, in Hollywood, I'm not going to say this as a complete, you know, blanket statement, but like in general, it's like, you know, it's who you know. It's like getting your lucky break. It's like working away. And like, there's plenty of amazing actors who you'll never heard of because maybe they just didn't know the right person. Maybe they didn't have the perfect smile or whatever. YouTube's algorithm is a meritocracy. If you make a video that has better metrics and is more entertaining and more interesting than a channel with 10 million subs, you will get more views. Like, if you can do that, it's easy said than done. But that's why you see these sudden rises. And every time you look at the person who had this big blow up, whether it's, you know, even, you know, people that are maybe a bit more controversial, like even like the Paul brothers, they were providing something different than new. Casey Neistat, he was, you know, making incredibly good content in 2017 that, you know, I feel like everyone who loves YouTube was watching. Beast, Mr. Beast, like it essentially invented a genre of YouTube. Like, he makes videos that are kind of in a category of their own. And if you erased Mr. Beast's name from history and erased his success and everyone who knew he was, and he started again now and he started making videos of the same quality, he'd be right back up there again. And that's why YouTube's algorithm, in my opinion, is so interesting and so fair. No one's saying it's easy. Like, it's difficult. And like, at the end of the day, like, you're competing against people who maybe have more experience, more money, more budgets. But I still say, like, if you go into film or music, you could be a great band or a great rapper or a great actor. And there's so many like constructs getting in your way. If you're on YouTube, if you go into a niche and you make content better than anyone else in the niche, you will blow up. And that's why you see so many channels really succeed.
It's really, really interesting. And is that driven purely by the algorithm, Paddy?
Well, I mean, the algorithm is driven by the audience. So like, it's the audience's preference. If the audience preferred, you know, like big celebrity names, that's what would be shown. So the algorithm follows the audience. Like, if the audience proved that they like kind of individual creators, as opposed to say someone like, let's say someone like Will Smith, they can come to YouTube and pull some views. But realistically, there's like YouTubers in their bedrooms pulling like 3 times the viewership. And that's because the YouTube audience prefers that authentic feel and, you know, the actual people they can relate to and get on with. So yeah, it's sort of the audience wants that. So YouTube cultivates that. But there is obviously some side of things where, because it's a, you know, at the end of the day, it's an algorithm and it's a recommendation system. It's not going to look at who your dad was. You know? Yeah. It's going to look at what are your numbers and what are the matching audiences that we can recommend this content to.
It's the ultimate meritocracy, as you say. Casey Neistat, just go back to him for a second. My God. We were addicted to him, me and my wife. Every day, that was what we did at dinner. Sat down, watched Casey's daily vlog. For anyone not familiar with Casey, he daily vlogged for how long, Paddy?
I think it was like 2.5 or 3 years.
Yeah. Every day produced a daily vlog, 10 minutes. Just the highest quality stuff, narrative, story-driven. It could be about absolutely nothing. And you would sit down and be entertained for 10 minutes. Like, it's just, if you haven't watched it, go back, go check him out after the pod. Phenomenal stuff. Like, and he was a very interesting case in the fact that he had started in traditional media and then crossed over.
Yeah, yeah. And if you kind of look at what he did in traditional media, though, it's funny. Some of that stuff, it actually feels like kind of the sort of stuff that blew up in the early days of YouTube. Mm-hmm. So he did that like Vlogbrothers thing with his brother, I think. And if you look at it, it's homemade DIY stuff. And that was working in like 2003, 2004. So that, I guess there was almost like maybe he'd figured out something. Maybe there was a bit of a feeling around the content he was making that there was something here. He just needed the platform. And yeah, he took a bit of time. Like, he did do a lot of traditional media stuff. And then when he went daily, you know, I mean, he was doing that at a time where daily content was just very popular. It was the trend. Everything was pointing towards that trend. And he just crushed it. He made great videos every single day. And I can't tell you, and I'm sure you know yourself, but like, any YouTuber you're seeing right now on your screen, I would say the vast majority were Casey fans. Like, I'm a Casey fan, like, you know, and you know, there's like Casey super fans and then there's like Casey fans. I wouldn't call myself a super fan, but I watched every video. So maybe I am. and you know, just incredible content. So simple. Like, it was, you know, you could be sitting down on your couch and you could see he uploaded, and then you could see that RTE are coming out with a new show that, you know, they had like a 3 million euro budget for. They've got like these big actors. You're picking the Casey Neistat video, and it's just a guy going around with a drone or something in New York on a skateboard. It just sums up why YouTube is popular, I think.
The relationship side of YouTube is fascinating.
Yeah.
You build relationships with these creators. Like, you build a relationship with Casey. You feel like you're part of his life. It's so intimate. And like you said, it's not amateur, but it's raw. You know, it's very unpolished. You feel like you're getting an insight into his life, as opposed to when you watch TV, you know, it's been scripted and you know, it's all quite fake. But when with him, you just feel like you're having this insight into how he lives his life.
Yeah, that's the thing. That is the thing. That's the differentiator. That's the competitive advantage, I feel. And sure, like, you know, there's a million channels on YouTube now. Like, you know, there's millions of channels on YouTube, and some of them aren't relationship based at all. Some of them are like purely educational or whatever. But at its essence, so much of the big entertainment channels is the fact that you actually feel part of that journey. You know, when you watch a TV show, you can kind of like, and there is loads of great TV shows, and I love traditional media and TV as well. Like, I love a good movie more than as much as the next man. I love a good TV show as well. But you never, like, you feel kind of connected to them in that moment. But when you're really into a YouTuber, it sounds almost cringy to say, but it is like having a friend through a screen, and it's someone that you can relate to. It's someone that in some ways like can shape your kind of worldview. And like, I've like, there's a YouTuber I watch, he's called Joe Delaney, and he's a fitness YouTuber.
I watch him as well. Yeah. Fascinating dude. And deep dude. Like,
I watched a lot of his videos when I was like, I would say kind of like 18, 19, 20, like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I think back to it all the time, but I'm like, those videos actually like have shaped a lot of my perspective on things. And I'm sure if he was listening to this, he'd probably be like, oh no, what have I done? But like, you know, he was a smart guy. He wasn't any, you know, he's not like, you know, a philosopher or anything, but he was a smart guy. And he had like good morals and a good outlook on life. And I feel like I've applied that. Whereas, you know, I could watch a movie that's breaking down like, you know, some great philosopher and stuff. And sure, I could kind of learn from it. And, you know, I've read lots of books and learned from them, but there's something to be said from just like learning from a friend. You know, it feels like the most influential people on you are the people you feel closest to. So it makes sense why YouTubers have a both positive and negative influence over people, and largely positive, which is lucky to say.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, it is generally a positive place as opposed to a lot of other social media. Why do you think that is?
I mean, there's kind of two sides to it where, like, it depends. So, like, I guess saying it's largely positive might be a bit too far because there is, like...
If you don't go to the comments section, if you don't scroll down too far in the comments section, if you watch the video in the first two or three comments, it's positive.
Exactly. I think it's just so much easier to be a passerby with Twitter or Instagram because you can see a piece of content, you know, on your Twitter, and you might not have any relationship to that person. You're not going to invest any time into them. But if you disagree with it, you could just be like, this is... you know, this is useless or this is rubbish. Like, I'm not saying we would, but like, you know, your typical internet troll. Whereas on YouTube, I guess it requires a bit more commitment. You have to go onto the platform, watch a video before you, like, you know, spout your hate. But, you know, I guess there's plenty of like sides of YouTube that can get very toxic. Like the whole sort of like entertainment and then commentary channels, a lot of that got quite toxic. But, you know, maybe people like me and you, we watch a lot of people like, you know, kind of, like the Graham Stephens, the people like that. And you don't really think of those people getting much hate. And I'm sure they do get some, but like it's nothing compared to, let's say, you know, an Instagram model who gets thousands of comments a day saying she looks slightly overweight today or something, you know. I guess it's the reason the audience is there, and primarily on YouTube. If you're watching videos, it's because you like that creator. And discovery on YouTube is pretty good as well, to the point where I look at my Twitter feed even today and I still get like shown tweets that annoy me. And that can only be really intentional. They're getting engagement.
It has to be a purpose. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, whereas YouTube, and same with Facebook, like Facebook cultivate, at least I think they've changed their algorithm slightly more in the last 2 years, but for a very long period of time, they cultivated engagement. Like they wanted engagement no matter what. So like they show people things that they disagree with because it got more engagement and it kept them arguing on the platform. Whereas YouTube really put focus on viewer satisfaction. So how much people are actually enjoying the content, and like they have ways, they have like data sets to like to actually measure that and to try and figure out, okay, did someone actually enjoy this video or not? So in general, if you're on your YouTube recommended page, you're going to get recommended videos that there's a high chance you're going to like. Whereas on Twitter, you can go through and you're like, I really disagree with that. I hate that. And it's just trying to provoke a reaction. So maybe there's like a deeper consequence of that we see reflected in.
I think you're right. They're geared up for different things, right? It's exactly like you just broke down there. Twitter and Facebook are geared up to get engagement above all else, whereas YouTube is geared up to get you watching and get you enjoying. It's geared up so you kind of go, oh, great, Paddy's got a new video, or oh, great, you know, Max Tuning's got a new video. Great, I love that. You know, and then just you go into the thing, you spend longer watching ads. They both do the same means, but they're very, very different ways of approaching it. Bring me back. I've fallen into the YouTube love session already. Bring me back to how you started, though, because you said you had the Irish channel first, the Irish music channel first. Did you go to college or did you jump straight into it? What was that? When you left school, what happened? What'd you do?
Yeah, so like that was the first successful channel I had. You know, I'd say between the ages of 11 and that age, which was 16 or 17, I probably started 40 channels. Like, wow. I tried to count it one day, and I tell people I've had 30 channels. I'm pretty sure it's probably closer to like 50, because I have so many email accounts, and like I found a notebook recently from when I was
all your passwords was, written down, good security.
Yeah, when I was a young fella, and it was like there was a date on it, it was like 2012 or something, and it was like just this list of passwords for all these different ideas, because I'm an ideas person. So whenever I think it'd be great to do, I was into calisthenics, for example, like, you know, pull-ups and stuff like that. I was like, it'd be great to do a channel on calisthenics. I guarantee you'd get loads of views. So I started a channel, did like two videos, I gave up and did another channel and, you know, made two videos. I just completely followed my passion. I didn't really stick to anything. So like the Irish music channel, which is called RMTV, if anyone wants to look it up. You know, the content was amazing. I made a lot of mistakes with it. I didn't do everything right, but it was the first thing that actually got real traction to the point where, I mean, like, it's got like 120k subs now, which to
still going.
It is discontinued, but it is still growing. Mm. But to some people, it would look like, you know, sometimes with the amounts of views we see and stuff nowadays, it seems like a small number. But in terms of the niche I was addressing, Irish hip hop, like, it's a lot of people, and it was a lot of people back then. I remember just seeing the view counts and being like, wow, like, I had no idea the audience was this big for this content, and I don't think anyone did. I started that when I was in like fifth year in school, perhaps fifth or sixth year in school. But I'll be honest, like I definitely had a business mind, but I'm not one of those like prodigies that are suddenly like at 16, 17, like, wow, I can just go full into this. Cause I think even back then, like 2013, 2014, it wasn't as accepted. It wasn't even as known. So like right now, if you're like a 17-year-old kid and you're coming with your leaving cert, and someone asks you what you're doing after school, and you're saying, I'm going to continue my YouTube channel, and you've got like 50K subscribers, they're like, sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you know, I might have had like double that, but if I told people, you know, I'm going to do this YouTube channel, they would have been like, are you crazy? So I went to college, I went to DCU, studied a really good program at DCU, mix of like business, marketing, technology, Bachelor of Science, which was, you know, a lot of it didn't really apply to what I do now, to be honest, like most colleges, but it was more about just giving myself some breathing room in life as well, because the idea of just rushing straight into a channel, sure, it's attractive when you think about it, but then you kind of miss out on some things. You know, that kind of whole college experience, I was like, yeah, I might as well go. And I'm really glad I did go, actually. So I went to college. In college, I had a placement. I worked in a marketing agency in Dublin for a year, just over a year. Had an interesting time there. Learned a lot about, you know, everything from management. So I had a team that was working with me to, you know, content creation, to digital marketing, to strategy, even to like how to like stick to deadlines and stuff. That taught me a lot. And then after that finished, so that placement lasted a year. After that finished, I got my last paycheck for that job, and the Irish music channel had declined quite considerably, because in 2017, YouTube revenue was just obliterated because of a few controversies, the adpocalypse, they called it. And that really affected content that had profanity in it. So I was able to monetize the videos shot myself on that channel, which I went around and filmed with different artists. And I, like, you know, I drove to Sligo, I filmed loads of videos, I drove to Mayo, I'd done these road trips where I filmed videos, and suddenly, like, you know, the videos might have made me like a few hundred quid or maybe even £1,000. And now suddenly they're, you know, making me peanuts, like, you know, £5 a video. And it took me like a day to film it. So I was like, wow, you know, I still had the other side of the business, which was like the, you know, promoting a single or something, but like, it wasn't that sustainable. It wasn't a big, you know, like in general, like music artists aren't the people with the biggest budgets. And, you know, you always want to make sure you really deliver value for them as well, because everyone relates to that position of trying to get something out there, at least you do as a creative person. so it was a difficult thing to monetize, and that was kind of, I guess, failing in a way. I'd finished that job, and I remember just feeling a bit like, like I don't really have anything that I'm doing right now. I don't have like a project or anything. And then I remember this Paddy Galloway channel, which is the channel that people know me from now, which I actually started 2 years earlier. And I'd made a few videos on that channel. I'd done extremely well. Like my first like YouTube breakdown video, I remember I spent probably about a week making that video. I spent so much time making it, and I only made it because I actually wrote the script for myself to learn myself about the YouTuber, to like understand how he grew. Okay. I didn't write it for a video.
Who was it?
Peter McKinnon.
Oh yes.
The photography guy. Class. And because he grew to 1 million subscribers in 1 year, in a very competitive niche. So I was like, okay, what if I convert this to a video? Convert it to a video, upload it to a channel that I already had, which at the time was called FaxTube, which is now my current channel. It had a few videos on there about like facts about YouTubers, like how much KSI makes. And I had like some million view videos on there that had, you know, quite decent momentum. But I uploaded this video in September 2017, the Peter McKinnon one. And I was kind of excited about it, but I was also like, I don't know how this is going to do. I uploaded it and I got like 60 views in like the first day, which was like terrible for this channel. Like in general, you should get like 500 or 1,000. I got like 60 views and like dislikes, and people were like, what is this? And I was like, at the time, I was like, maybe this YouTube channel isn't for me. Like maybe I should just, you know, focus on college and whatever else. And then like, I remember someone messaged me saying, I watched your Peter McKinnon video. It was really good. A friend, like, and I was like, how did you find that? And he was like, it just got recommended to me and I watched it. And I logged back into YouTube Studio and the video had like 300,000 views.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this, you know, this is cool. So I made a video on Casey Neistat then, which again got like 600,000 views or something. And then I made another video after that. And I think one more after that. And they didn't do quite as well, but they still got a lot of views. But I just left the channel completely dormant after that because I just didn't see the bigger picture at the time. And I don't think I was fully as committed or as passionate to YouTube at that particular time in my life because of some of the stuff that had gone on with the Irish hip hop channel. And like, I was just like, oh, YouTube's like too risky. But after the job finished, after the Irish channel was really, Irish rap channel was really declining, I was like, that channel's still there. It's got like 30K subs. Maybe I could make something of this. Like maybe I could like, because I know so much about YouTube and I've done this and people seem to really, really like the videos. Maybe I could make something really special of this. So I just started making videos. And I channeled this kind of like feeling of not having anything because I just didn't have a project. And by not having anything, I was okay. Like I didn't have much, but I was okay financially. I wasn't like in trouble or anything, but I just didn't have any like passion. And whenever I don't have like something I'm working on, I just feel like depressed. I just like, I don't have any energy. I'm like, what am I doing? I need to have something to work on, which is why whenever I talk about like early retirements, I just think actually that's probably a terrible idea because I just need to have something I'm working on. So I started posting these videos and they did pretty well. Like they got like 30K views. So I was a channel like 30K subscribers and the videos were getting like 30-50K views all the way up until Christmas 2019 when I uploaded a video on Mr. Beast. And at the time I had 40K subs, uploaded that video. And to this day, it's the most viral video. It's not the most viewed video I've ever made on any channel, but it's the most viral video, as in it got the most amount of views in a short amount of time. I uploaded that on December the 17th, 2019. Took a couple of days to start getting recommended. Then it picked up a little bit. And I remember I woke up on the 23rd of December and it had like 40K views in a week. I was like, wow, this is a good performing video. And I had like a comment from my friend, my friend Nate O'Brien, who makes finance videos. You might have seen him before.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is a great video. It's going to get 1 million views. And I was like, oh, like imagine. And then because of Christmas, there's a few other things going on. I just sort of left it and I checked it back again that evening and it shot up to 100K views. And then on the 24th, in one day, it got like 600,000 views. On the 25th, it got like 600,000 views.
Wow.
So my real time on YouTube had gone from like, you know, a few thousand views every 48 hours to like 1.4 million. And I was like, oh my God.
What a Christmas.
And yeah. And like the video, like I had actually said at the end of the video, I've set a goal this year to hit 50K subs. I don't think it's going to happen, but if you're watching this video, just subscribe. That video alone brought in 50K subs.
Wow.
In like a month. So that really took off. And from there, I was like, I looked at the comments and I was like, inside of me, I was kind of thinking, is this luck? Like, did I just get lucky with, did I just hit the lottery? But when I looked at the comments, I was like, these videos are actually really helpful and no one else is doing them. And some people think it might be, oh, you're just covering a big YouTuber, like that's why you're getting views. But I'd always show them, like, look at all these other videos where people covered like the YouTuber in other like situations of like, you know, like how much money does this YouTuber make, or how did this YouTuber do this or whatever. But my angle was a bit different. I think it was coming at it from a new angle that a lot of other people hadn't seen before. And I was like, okay, maybe this isn't luck. Maybe there's a career here. And essentially since then, so 2020 and 2021, I've just been pushing out videos and growing month over month. So now December 2019, I was on 40K before the Mr. Beast video. And now I'm on to 70K, I think. And, you know, I see a lot of potential to keep growing it. And I'm very blessed. And I still think it's a bit of luck, but obviously I hit the right
everything
thing
is, on
the
buddy. Right head. Everything is luck.
Yeah.
The older you get, you realize the more luck, and just be honest, you're more honest than most people would be, because most people don't recognize the importance that luck played in their journey. So yeah, luck is phenomenal. To anyone who's listened to this for the first time and hasn't heard previous episodes we've done with creators like Rob or people like that, how does a YouTuber make money?
Yeah, so the easiest way a YouTuber makes money is after they get 1,000 subs and 4,000 watch hours, which are like amount of hours people watch the content, you can just turn on a button that puts ads at the start of your video. And if the video is over 8 minutes, you can put ads in the middle of your video and you can put ads at the end of the video. And essentially, anytime someone clicks on a video, if they see an ad, it registers and you get a tiny percentage of that. I mean, it's not a tiny percentage. It's 55% and you should get 45%. But like every view counts for like a tiny amount. It's like, a you know, 0.01%. But when that adds up and you're getting a few thousand views a video or whatever, you can start to make a decent amount of money from AdSense. I would say like in most niches, you need like probably like 1 million views a month to make considerable money with AdSense, like enough to pay for a living depending on your niche. But there's some niches, like for example, like my niche is quite good for ad revenue, and there's other niches like finance where advertisers will really want to pay a lot of money for your ads because it's a niche with lots of money around it. Like finance is like banks and like lawyers and like all these things that would want to attract the right audience, so they're willing to pay a lot more. It's like, you know, like someone who's sponsoring the Formula One might pay a lot more than someone who's sponsoring like League Two football, because the average Formula One fan, at least the notion is they're wealthy and they're really into, you know, cars and Rolexes and, you know, stuff like that. The same thing kind of applies to YouTube. It varies so much on niche. So depending on your niche, you get like essentially an RPM, which is how much you get paid per 1,000 views. Typically, it'd be kind of anywhere between like $2 and like $5 for most channels. But the more niche and the more focused on like an older audience with money, so like finance, golf, fishing, like any channels that have like an audience that's, let's say, 25 to 35 and they actually have budget to spend, they'll typically get a lot higher. I've seen up to like $20, $30, $40. So to put that into context, if you make a video with 1 million views, you're going to make 40 grand. So when you put it like that, you're like, oh, wow. Like that is,
I think that's the line that's just hooked in all the listeners. They're like, wait, what did he say?
Yeah.
So there's money to be made, obviously, in YouTube. For anyone that's completely not in the space at all, it is a lucrative business if you have the right if you have the right niche and the right set of skills.
Yeah. There is. It's competitive. But the thing is, you don't necessarily need to, like, people think about YouTube, and still to this day, the kind of preconceived notion about YouTube is, you make YouTube videos, okay, you're a crazy guy that runs around with a camera. But there are like hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of YouTube channels that are making 6, 7, 8 figures without even appearing on camera. There's channels that make money just reviewing tech. There's channels that make money just, you know, writing film reviews or whatever. And you don't always need the big views. Like, you can make a decent living on YouTube with like 5-10,000 views a video if you monetize in other ways, because I've mentioned AdSense, but you know, it's an audience. You can use affiliate marketing, you can send people to a product and get a commission, you could do sponsorships. Like when you get to kind of 10K views a video, you'll start to get brands reaching out to sponsor content. They might give you like $1,000 to mention, you know, their product in your video for 10 seconds or for 60 seconds or whatever. So really, the kind of further you get, the bigger the audience you build, or the more focused your audience gets around a certain topic, the more opportunities you have to monetize. And then there's also like the, you know, creator products. Like you could launch your own course, you could launch your own merch line, you could, you know, there's infinite things you can kind of leverage the audience to do. But it all comes back to the content. If you can make content that even like a few thousand people watch, there's a business there. If you can make content that make, you know, that you get a few hundred thousand people watching, depending on your niche, there's a multi-million euro business there. Mm.
And you touched on it there in terms of creators using their audience for their own products. I was watching a Max Tuning video last night, and he was talking about his business, Sour Candy, Sour Strips. And he launched it 2 years ago. And he kind of said in a kind of throwaway comment, he goes, yeah, and this year we'll probably do 8 figures. And I had to like get my fingers out and count out how many that was. That is incredible. Two years. 8 figures in turnover.
And he's a big YouTuber, but he, like, I would say, I can't remember because I watched him a while ago, but I would say he's got like 300 or 400K subscribers.
350, I think. So somewhere in the middle, somewhere around that. So like big, but not like astronomical big.
Exactly.
But he is such a passionate, when you look at his viewer count and then you look at the views he's getting per video, it's quite high. And obviously they're engaged and they're actually driving it. Now he's a smart dude, right? He kind of plays it up a bit that he isn't, but he's clearly a smart guy. He's in Target, he's in Walmart, he's gone directly into retail as well. So he's not just, you know, click the link to buy some candy off me. He's really leveraged it. But it comes back to what you're saying, the power of leveraging an audience is astronomical. I think a lot of people haven't woken up to that yet. Social media has gobbled up a lot of ad spend over the last like 5-6 years. But you can slowly see it turn into long form content and YouTube in particular.
Yeah. And I think if I was to sell YouTube to a brand, for example, you can like, you know, pay for a sponsored post on Instagram or something. And, you know, I've got an Instagram page that's got like 160K followers. So I've got like a good idea of like how much people are offered or how much opportunities there is there. And I think a lot of brands are woken up to the fact that, in general, on like Instagram and TikTok, they can be good for like product placement and like specific things. So like if you're like a restaurant or like a hotel chain, like, you know, it makes sense. But for a lot of other products, especially when they're more niche, if you can find a YouTuber that's got like 100K views a video and has a really targeted audience, their viewers aren't just casually watching them. They're super engaged and in tune. Mm-hmm. There are exceptions to this, but the general like Instagram influencer per se, which I respect anyone that puts themselves out there, it's no shade at all. But the average Instagram influencer, if you go and like find their like core fans and say like, you know, how engaged are you with them? They're kind of like, oh, they post good pictures, I like them. Or, you know, oh, they post like funny videos, it's funny, whatever. But if you find like the core following of like, you know, Casey Neistat, it's like, he's a huge part of my life. It's kind of rare you'd get that in like, you know, an Instagram influencer. You wouldn't get like someone saying they're like a huge part of my life, you know. You know, obviously there's exceptions, but in general. And that's where the value is, because I know, like even with my channel to a certain extent, I know that if I endorse something, there's, you know, at least a few thousand people that are going to go check it out. And they're going to go say, oh, what's this all about? Paddy says it's good. And that's why I like the responsibility comes with that power of being like, okay, I can't just take money from anyone. Like I've been offered mind-boggling amounts of money from just ridiculous companies that make no sense and would just...
I remember you, I love your Q&As. I love your Q&As you put up on Instagram, because they're like, they're a gem of information. So anyone, go follow Paddy on Instagram and YouTube, but definitely check out his Q&As on Instagram, because you put up so much good information. You posted up some mad stories about stuff you were offered and money you were offered for shout outs and Instagram posts.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is like when you're in a good audience like me, like I am, or a good niche like I am, and you're very focused on an engaged audience and you get good views per video. So if you're, for example, if you're a brand and you're looking for, if you've got like a YouTube product, or if you've got, it doesn't have to be a YouTube product, if you're just like a camera producer, or maybe you're like a royalty-free music library, all these things that are kind of relatable to anyone who makes content, and you're looking for a creator who makes videos for YouTubers, I'm lucky enough to say that there's not that many other channels that get my level of views. There's maybe like me and like maybe one or two other channels in the whole of the world that gets the level of views I have for my niche. So if you're a business, you know, it's like the top of the pile. This is the people who have the biggest audiences or gets the most views per video, which again, like completely lucky to have. And maybe that won't always be the case, but at least it is for now. So they're willing to spend a lot of money. They're willing to spend a lot of money. And like maybe the typical brand deal that someone with an entertainment channel gets, they might get more views per video, but they might get less in the brand deal because there's like an infinite amount of other channels they could go to, and it becomes like a bidding war of like, oh, you know, I'll do it for $4,000. Oh, I'll do it for 3.5. Whereas, you know, in my case, there's not that many people that have that audience in this niche.
It's 50 grand, lads, or hit the road.
So yeah, I can negotiate big deals. And, you know, on top of that, yeah, like you said, like I say on my story sometimes, I'll get people, you know, who'll be like, you know, post one video and we'll give you $15,000 just to promote this app. And I go look at the app and it's useless, or it's trying to be the new Photoshop, or it's trying to be the new Premiere Pro, and it's got terrible user interface. And it's clear that maybe they're a Chinese company, maybe they're like a big Silicon Valley startup with like a lot of investor money. It doesn't matter to me. If it's not good, I am not promoting it. I don't care if they pay me 20, 30, 40 grand. I mean, you know, everyone likes to say that, but like if someone came to me and offered me $100,000, you know, I'd have to like really consider my life choices and morals. Not trying to put myself out there. Like I don't want the temptation, but I think there's something in that, like being able to say no. And you know, there is like a lot of people sort of, this is like a bit of a more, I guess almost like introspective point, but a lot of people say, oh, like I only take the brand deals that I want to work with, but that comes from a place of privilege in some way. So like maybe I'm a privileged channel right now that I have a lot of opportunities, whereas maybe like a smaller entertainment channel, or maybe even a bigger entertainment channel that doesn't have the best RPMs, they need the money to pay their team. So sometimes they have to like, I never can justify like promoting something terrible, but sometimes they have to like push that boundary a little bit and say like, Raid Shadow Legends, come on in. Let's get going. Like $10,000, put it down and the video's out. There we go. Take it off.
The thing is with a YouTuber, you are your brand. You are... Yeah. Paddy Galloway is the brand. You are the name. Your name is over the door. You're the face of it. So for you to put something, your name to that it means a lot, I think. Talk to me about your other business, the consulting business, because that's fascinating in itself. You have two businesses parallel, very similar, but parallel. Talk to me about that. What do you do? And you've worked with some massive names. So if you can maybe talk about what you've done with them as well, that'd be great.
Yeah. So essentially, have you ever heard that phrase, like the best way to learn is to teach? I think it's so true. And like, you know, it is like a certain level of imposter syndrome comes with that, because you're like, how can you teach something that you're still learning? I kind of always argue that you should be always learning. But with the channel, naturally, I was having to put a lot of research into channels. And then I was like, okay, a lot of people are watching. Damn, I better make sure I know what I'm talking about. I better be, you know, making sure I'm up to date on the latest trends. And then over time, I just started to really figure out stuff about YouTube. And like, I would, you know, put hours into my calendar every day where I'm just breaking down viral videos and seeing what the commonalities were. And I built like spreadsheets where I'd analyze video data and just constantly try to understand things. And this was all before I started consulting. So I got to the point where I'm like, wow, I am, you know, quite skilled at this. I can make videos with good information there. And then off the back of those videos, I'd always get people saying, hey, do you offer any consulting? And I'd say, no, not yet, because I was just waiting until I felt like I was good enough to actually offer that. Okay. And then around June of last year, or May of last year, a guy reached out to me, is a good friend of mine now. And he was like, I'm looking to hire someone to come in. You seem to know your stuff. Would you be interested? And we started working together. You know, it was well paid, but it wasn't crazy money or anything, but it was a good opportunity to learn. And I worked with him for about, I would say, 10 to 20 hours a month consulting, where I just help him with thumbnails and titles. And because I was able to like use that foundation I had from my own channels and just from studying YouTube, I picked up things really quickly. Mm-hmm. So he was a Minecraft channel. I learned a Minecraft niche very quickly. I learned what worked and what didn't. And, you know, through my work, but through everyone else's work on the team, we put that channel from 20 million to basically like 50 or 60 million views a month. By the time I left. And as I said, like it definitely wasn't just me. Like there was lots of other factors, lots of other people working really hard on it. But a lot of what we were applying was working, and the approach we took and the way I was like helping him train up new people. And like every week we'd have a meeting where I'd pitch the latest data we're getting back from our videos, and we were learning from it each time. We had this really nice feedback loop system. And in simple terms, if you take a channel from 20 million to 60 million views, that's 3x revenue. So I was like, you know, there's a bigger business here. Like there's something more that I can do here. Like I can build, I could take on multiple clients. Like at the time I was just working with him and like a few other people on a bit of a lesser basis, all big channels, but like on a lesser basis, like a few hours a month instead of 10 or 20 hours a month. And long story short, like I started posting about it on Twitter because I had a bit of a following there anyway. And I just started posting stuff like being like, okay, like, you know, I'm working on this channel now. We just got 3 million views in the first 24 hours. We got 6 million views on this video. You know, I just posted a few things here and there. And then more people reached out, started working with a few more people. At one point, obviously Mr. Beast reached out. I chatted to him a few times before just on Twitter, and we were on a call together actually a few months prior as well. And he was just like, you know, I see you're doing a lot of cool stuff. I'd love you to come work with me. So like, to cut a long story short, it was originally just kind of like, hey, it'd be cool if we work together, but let's just talk it out over the next few weeks. And then he got me to do some work, and then he was like, okay, I want you now. And we started doing some work together, and it didn't turn into a long-term thing, because, you know, they primarily look for people that are very like all in on his channel, because that's the kind of business he's building, which is just incredible. So it didn't like cultivate into anything too long-term, but I worked with him for a few months, and that was just incredible learning experience. And some of the videos I worked on, I just look at them now and they've got like, you know, one of them has like 120 million views. And I'm like, it's just ridiculous to think that a video that, you know, I remember just being worked on as like this little baby that had like lots of terrible moments. And like, you know, the first cut was all rough. And I remember me and the editor were working together on it. And like, we were like, oh wow, like this is such a mess. There's so many timelines, you know, and working it into this video that, you know, did it incredibly well. And, you know, again, just like with everything else, I played a very small part in the overall success of it, but it's still a part, and it's still helped contribute to the video success. And since then, I've been working with lots of big creators, people like Preston Plays, who's a channel in the United States, who's got a combined YouTube following of 50 million, gets about 300-400 million views a month from his channels. I've worked with plenty of big 1 million plus channels. Most of the big like entertainment channels popping off right now, I've worked with people like Airac, people like Zealous, people like Ryan Trahan, I've done calls with. And these are all guys, you know, pulling 50 million views a month, 20 million views a month, 100 million views a month. And actually just before this call, I'd just been doing some work with the Infographics Show, which is a big channel with 11 million subscribers that pulls like 100 million views a month.
Wow.
So it's been a phenomenal experience, and it's just been this constant snowball effect from like doing good work and then just constantly getting better and just getting results. Like none of this would happen if I didn't get results with people, and that's the one thing I really pride myself in. In the majority of cases, obviously there's exceptions. In the majority of cases, when I start working with a channel, we increase views, and that's essentially my job and my goal.
What? We'll get a little bit of free consulting off you here, Paddy. If anyone wants to book consulting with Paddy, go to his YouTube channel or his Instagram or his Twitter. But when you, if people listening here, if we've YouTubers in our midst here listening, what general advice? I know it's very difficult to give advice when you can't see the channel. If someone's starting out on YouTube, right, that's probably an easier question. If someone's starting out, what are the core fundamentals they need to be looking at?
Yeah, and that's the key distinction, because if it's a, you know, a channel with 20 million subscribers, yeah, I'm like looking at, you know, retention fall off at 30 seconds and comparing against the average and comparing multiple retention curves on the one chart and seeing these things and, you know, seeing how impressions change based on all these other factors and thumbnail switches. But for someone starting out, I mean, it's cliche advice, but the first thing is to do is just to make loads of videos and on plenty of channels. Like, you know, you can start lots of channels. Like your first channel probably isn't gonna be the one that takes off for you. And some people might say, oh, but it's about my personal brand, so like that's my channel. I'm like, well, maybe the first type of content you make on that channel isn't what takes off for you. Maybe you'll find an interest in a year's time that suddenly you have success with or whatever. So I think the first thing is just to get a volume of content out there. After that point, I would just really advise people to think about the attention span of a YouTube viewer. So a lot of people make videos and they'll do stuff like, hey guys, how's it going? Welcome back to the channel. My name is, you know, they do these like typical introductions, and you know, we're all guilty of this. I did it, you know, a few years ago before I realized in retention that it's just a really bad thing for audience retention, which for anyone listening who doesn't know what I mean by audience retention, it's essentially the retention or the retainment of the viewer on a video. So how long they're staying for, what points they click off. And YouTube give you this really useful retention curve where you can see exactly where someone might have fell off or where someone spiked, which is maybe they rewound and watched again. And it gives you a great idea of like the average viewer's experience with the video. Did they watch half the video? Did they watch the whole video? Or whatever. But yeah, being very hyper aware at the start of the audience's rootlessness nature of having all this choice. YouTube is abundance of choice. If you go into a cinema, you've sat down, you've got your popcorn. Even if it is a boring moment to start a movie, you're just going to stick it out and see if it's good. If you're watching TV, you turn on the TV, you look at the guide, you turn on the TV. Sure, you can reach and turn the controller, but you're kind of invested into it. You've sunk some time into it. On YouTube, you're watching a video and there's 7, 8 videos all down the side that are brightly colored on all your favorite interests. So if you give the viewer even this opportunity to consider that they might not want to watch this video anymore, you've lost. So the best advice I can give is make videos that just capture your attention. No over-introducing yourself. No like big explanations about what you're going to do today. Just get into it. Just get into the content. Get straight into the video as quickly as possible. The best intros I see are the shortest intros. You don't want to spend 60 seconds introducing the topic. And you also don't want to you also want to think about, okay, let's just take the viewers. Let's say you're making a video on Ethereum. And your video on Ethereum, which is a cryptocurrency, for those who don't know, I'm talking about kind of abstract stuff here. If you're making a video on Ethereum, maybe it's like my prediction for Ethereum, like what it's going to get. Is it going to go to 25K or something by 2022? What a beginner YouTuber will often do is say, welcome to my channel. I'm going to do a prediction on Ethereum, blah, blah, blah. And then they go, so what is Ethereum? Ethereum is this. And do like a really big introduction on what Ethereum is, because they're like, oh, I have to explain what it is. Anyone watching an Ethereum price prediction video knows what Ethereum is. Some people just don't know what it is, but they just don't care. They want to see the price, you know? So spending loads of time introducing these topics that just, you know, are irrelevant to the majority of the audience. And they might say that their rebuttal to that might be, oh, well, some people might not know what it is. So for those who don't know, I'm going to spend 2 minutes explaining it. And I'm like, you know, it's maths. If 90% of people do know, you know, 90% of your viewers are going to have a negative experience with that part of the video, because they're just going to be like, what are you on about? What are you talking about? So I think being just hyper aware of who your audience is and just who the YouTube audience as a whole is and how rootless they are with the way they consume content. And then after that point, I would say just having a very clear format for your videos and very clear niche as well. It's always a bit of a mistake, I think, when people try to balance too many things. Like maybe they like music and gaming, so they make gaming videos and music videos and rotate them and be like, well, people who like gaming like these videos and people who like music like these videos. It's a win-win. Like the way YouTube works isn't like that. You're just going to have a split audience where you're probably going to kneecap growth, where you probably, if you focused all on music or you focused all on gaming, you might have a lot better success in those individual areas. But when they're together, it's like any business. It's like a kind of blurred value proposition to the viewer. Like, what am I getting from this channel? So I would say like having a very clear format for your content. And even to the point of like a format of like the structure the videos take. If you look at my channel, every video is quite similar. They even have quite similar thumbnails, which is kind of branding in a way. So people are very familiar with them. They're all around 10 or 11 minutes long. In fact, I think every video I've uploaded in the last 2 years is between 10 minutes and 12 minutes long. They're all in that length. And that's not like a complete prerequisite. You don't have to make videos all the same length. Any length can kind of work on YouTube. It depends how good the video is. But I think in a way that kind of teaches you to format your content and get very specific about what kind of videos you're making. So starting out, I always think that's a good step as well to kind of think, what is a Paddy Galloway video? Okay, it's a 10-minute YouTube explanation. Let's reverse engineer it now. What should the first minute be? What should the first 2 minutes be? What should 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes throughout the video? That's really important. After that point, I think if there's a skill people should really focus on, it's Photoshop. And not just becoming great at Photoshopping, you know, random things, because the best graphic designers in the world are not the best thumbnail designers. So that your thumbnail, for those who don't know, is just the kind of like the cover art you can upload for a video that people see. And if they think it's interesting, they'll click. And it is the thumbnail and title are just as important as the video content itself. For a while, I would have said they're more important. Been a few shifts in how YouTube recommends content now, where it's just so important to have good retention and have good viewer satisfaction. But for a while, it was just, you know, if you could get the title and thumbnail right, you were golden. Like you could make like a pretty poor video, but if you get the title and thumbnail right, you'd still get big views. But now it's a balance, but there's just so important, thumbnail title. So thumbnail wise, bright. I can't see how many people I see make dark thumbnails, like dark backgrounds, shaded faces. Like how is that going to stick out against a YouTube feed that's full of really bright images? So bright images, vivid colors, think like lots of bright prime colors, like yellows, blues. They're always good to like have in thumbnails. They're not, you know, necessary, but just as an idea, like you see my videos, like I have a white background, a big bright red graph, black text and red text, which contrasts against the white background. Then I have the creator and I make the creator really bright. I pump up the saturation and brightness. Mm-hmm. And then I put a little stroke effect around the creator, which is like this light green. So when you look at that image, it's just like a color pop. And that's before you even decide if you want to watch the video. It's just grabbing your attention. So yeah, that's probably a few different things there. But I think they're the first things I'd look at, like getting good at Photoshop, getting good at making thumbnails, and just really focusing in on the audience and the YouTube viewer and not making videos where you introduce yourself for 5 minutes. And also on the same token, don't make videos where when you've finished delivering the video, you spend 5 minutes rambling, because that's all time that your retention curve is going down and you're losing out on value percentage that you could add to your overall retention.
That's savage advice there. I think we got great feedback for anyone who's thinking about starting a YouTube channel. Paddy, what does the future hold? I'll let you go. We've just hit the hour mark now, so I'll let you go in a second. What does the future hold for you? What are the plans for the next kind of 6 to 12 months?
I'm pretty like chill with it. I mean, that's, you know, you probably get some people on here that's like, I'm doing this in Q4 or whatever. But the way I'm taking things now is things are going really well for me, thankfully. Like I've built a business well into the six figures, into the mid six figures. It's been very successful. I'm very happy with that. And like, I'm not really motivated by money per se. So like, I know everyone's motivated by money, but after a certain point, it's like, what do you enjoy doing? And what do you feel like there's something really valuable you can provide the world? So a vague sort of answer is I'm looking for ways I can provide even more value to creators. I'm looking for ways I can leverage myself, because, you know, consulting is great and I can build, you know, potentially $1 million or $5 million per year business in consulting if things go right. But I'm looking for ways to leverage so I can spread myself across, you know, more channels. Like it's not so private. Like, you know, you pay Paddy Galloway these high consulting fees and you get them. I want something where, you know, people can afford in different parts of the world. Also maybe, you know, like products or membership groups where anyone can get advice that can apply to their channel. The difficulty is template advice isn't always the best advice. Yeah. So I need to play it very carefully, but there's lots of things I can do that I think can spread good advice out there and help creators. And really, like, my goal is like essentially to get 1,000 creators, like a gold play button or a diamond play button. Like I want to help creators grow, because I know it's, you know, it's like that thing, like I just love helping people, but genuinely, like there's nothing more exciting to me than growing a channel. I love it for myself. I love the idea of growing a channel.
Yeah.
So if I can work with people who are more talented with me in certain areas, so like, I'm not very good at video. Like, I'm okay at some video games, but like Minecraft, I'm not very good at Minecraft. I don't really know the game. But if I work with a Minecraft channel who's brilliant at the game and is really entertaining on camera, like I'm not the most entertaining guy for a young audience. I'm kind of a little monotone. You know, I'm not serious, but I'm like, I'm not super like, you know, energetic or whatever. So like, I can work with people who have skills that I don't have and still get to, you know, become part of that. Maybe it's like an equity in the channel. Maybe it's you know, just consulting on a retainer basis. But the thing about YouTube advice is there's a, you know, there is a little bit of a ceiling. I can grow this a lot bigger than I am. I can grow this. I feel I can grow my channel well into the millions. If I still enjoy it, of course. But when I'm working with like a Minecraft channel or an entertainment channel, you know, the sky's the limit with those channels. Like,
okay,
I in the last year, I've probably worked with, in some form, whether it's a call or a retainer contract, I've probably worked with 12 or 13 different Minecraft channels that have over 1 million subs. And, you know, anyone that has over 1 million subs on Minecraft that is pulling good views, so let's say like 20, 30 million views a month, you know, they're making a lot of money. And there's a lot of potential there and they're doing their hobby. So I guess I'm just always looking for ways to leverage what I'm doing, leverage my brand. Maybe maybe have some things I can scale a little bit better, so I don't have to be working so hard. I was up at 7 a.m. today. I've just finished my my previous work, and I jump into this podcast, which has been great, by the way. I've really enjoyed it. It's nice. It's a nice change to having to just pure present findings or data or whatever. It's a
nice wind down for the day.
Yeah,
Paddy, I always ask people to recommend a book or resource that's going to help them along the way. Is there anything that you've enjoyed personally or professionally that you'd recommend?
Great question.
I threw resource in there because some people asked the question a few times. People are like, I don't read books anymore. I'm like, damn it, I'm getting old. So like, is there like a podcast, a YouTube channel, a book or anything that you would recommend?
So I actually do read quite a lot. I think like a lot of people come to me and ask for book recommendations for YouTube. Like there's a good book, very good book by Daryl Lees called The YouTube Formula. Popular book, very well researched. Daryl's a great guy. I know him. I've talked to him a few times. Really, really nice guy. So that's always great for people that want like YouTube advice. But really, I like to think about, when I think about books and education, I like to think about not necessarily specific like information, because a lot of that is kind of always a little hard to apply to yourself. Mm. Like that book from Daryl is a brilliant book and can teach you a lot about YouTube. But I think there's something to be said for like learning from things that can teach you about maybe the world as a whole, or like yourself, or like your own philosophies to content. So like there's a book behind me there. You might not be able to see it. It's just there. It's called Zero to One by Peter Thiel.
Oh yes. Yeah. It is very good actually.
Peter Thiel's a bit of a crazy guy, but that book, I read that book when I was 21, and you know, I'm not going to attribute everything to that book, but some of the stuff he talked about in that book just made me really reassess how I was approaching business. So we talked about there, the fact that I kind of, with my content, I do something a little different to a lot of the other YouTube advice channels. When I was first starting this idea of like maybe doing a YouTube advice channel, I was thinking about doing the kind of face of the camera, nice backlighting, 5 tips to grow on YouTube. Mm. If I'd done that, I might have, you know, I might have grown, I might have built a business, but I don't think I would have grown as quickly with as few videos. I don't think I would have had as much impact, which I'm very lucky to have had. Because there's a bit in that book which talks about competition, and it's talking about like essentially competition is a loser's game in some ways, and you know, people compete in everything. Like I'm still competing for attention with other channels. Like everyone's competing at something, but in a business, not just looking at like what other people are doing in your niche and sort of saying, okay, how can I come at this from a completely new angle and provide something that's very hard to do? So maybe in a small scale, my channel is an example of that, because it is actually quite hard to replicate, because to make those videos, you need to have the credibility. You can't just, no, like your average Joe on the street can't just start making YouTube videos about how someone grew, because no one would listen to them, because, you know, what's their credibility? And that's built up over a very long period of time. So that was like a kind of competitive advantage.
You're building your moat.
Yeah, the moat. Like a lot of that stuff came from reading that book. So I definitely recommend people to check that out, especially if you've got like a business mind. Really, really good book. I'd have to give you another recommendation as well, because I do, it's that thing, I consume so much content, I learn so much from so many people. But when someone like says, what's one thing? I'm like, oh, there's so much. I would say one last thing I'd say is like, going back to that same thing about not necessarily like going into a book looking for something. I think if you just read enough books from like smart people, and they're not all necessarily like how to do this, like some of them might be just like, you know, I read a great book called Sapiens, which is just like the human evolution story. And you could think, how could that teach you anything about YouTube? It might not teach you anything about YouTube, but it might, maybe there's a word in there you learn, or maybe there's something in there that like teaches you something that you start to understand more about human behavior, which might lead to like another thought you have about YouTube or whatever. So I would say just embrace learning, like lots of books, lots of podcasts. And obviously just gravitate towards what you enjoy. Don't just try, because everyone's reading one book. Don't be just like, oh, I need to read that. Whatever you enjoy, gravitate towards.
I love it. Great advice. Good recommendations. Paddy, where can people learn more about you? So give me the name of your channels and your social accounts.
Yeah, YouTube, Paddy Galloway. Just type my name in. And there it is. Just come by. If you hear from the podcast, drop me a comment and say you came from this podcast. And then as well, just social media, my Instagram is Paddy Galloway, all one word, and my Twitter is PaddyG96. I'm actually more active on Twitter. I post there quite a lot. I post a lot of data, a lot of stuff there. And yeah, if anyone is interested in working together or anything like that, I have like links in my bio. So just reach out.
Perfect. Paddy, thank you so much. It's been an absolutely cracking chat. Very insightful. And thanks for being so detailed.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. We should probably do it again sometime.
Love it. Thanks, Paddy.
Thank you.
And that was my chat with Paddy Galloway. I hope you enjoyed it. Join me back here on Monday for a new Idea Lab. I'll chat to you then.